The Dory Monson Show on Cairo Radio. This is The Big Lead.
It is The Big Lead. It's Todd Herman filling in on The Dory Monson Show. But let's do this. This is unnatural. This is like the student trying to lead the class. So Dory's with us. Dory, I just want to step back. I just want to, you know what? I'm your sidekick. I'm stepping back. Dory Monson will lead the big lead as it should be. Dory.
206-97.3 Cairo FM. Welcome to the big show and welcome to the big lead. Our top stories this hour are coming to you from the Carter Subaru studio. And joining me for the big lead is our friend Todd Herman. Hello, Todd.
Dory, great to be here. Thanks for having me on the big lead. It's always an honor. There's lots to talk about.
Yeah, there really is. All right, well, let's start with something that you and I chatted about a couple of days ago on the big show. Let's get to our top story this hour.
The big lead, big local.
And that, of course, is what's been going on at Kennedy Catholic High School, where a big student protest has unfolded this week. There were walkouts yesterday because a couple of teachers who are gay, they announced on social media a couple of months ago that they were engaged, not to each other, but they were engaged, and the school has parted ways with them. And some say they were fired. Some say that they were just forced out, and it turned into a resignation. However it was framed, it's clear that there are some students who are furious. But, Todd, here's what I wanted to toss out for your consideration, because I read a Danny Westneat column in the Seattle Times about this. And he was saying that it is time for the Catholic Church to get into the 21st century, that we get up to 2020 and that they start allowing gay teachers. Now, of course, their teaching contract is very clear that if you live a life that is not consistent with Catholic doctrine, that you can be fired. And so they knew going in exactly what their situation was. But here's what I'm confused about, Todd, because the Catholic Church, with all of its flaws, and I have been a huge critic of the Catholic Church in covering up priest sex abuse scandals and all of that. So this isn't some moral equivalency here, but on this one particular issue, I want you to listen to a couple of people who have been adamantly against gay marriage, one of them being our most recent president, Barack Obama.
What I believe is that marriage is between a man and a woman.
As far as why, what in your religious faith calls you to be against gay marriage? Well,
what I believe in my faith is that a man and a woman, when they get married, are performing something before God, and it's not simply the two persons who are meeting.
Okay, so Barack Obama, because of his faith, believed that marriage was between a man and a woman. And the other most prominent Democrat, Hillary Clinton, she felt the exact same way.
I believe that marriage is not just a bond, but a sacred bond between a man and a woman.
You think New York State should recognize gay marriage?
No.
No. Okay.
So, Todd, here's my question for you. Is it so horrible that the Catholic Church has just remained consistent for millennia on this issue? I just find it incredibly arrogant when we have people in the news business who didn't say one peep about Barack Obama a few years ago, saying marriage was between a man and a woman. Hillary Clinton, the media didn't say one word about it. And now all of a sudden, it's a front page lead story on the 5 o'clock news. Students are walking out. And it's all because of politics. This has nothing to do with faith. It has nothing to do with doctrine. It has everything to do with just pure politics. But they didn't mind when their standard bearers, Obama and Hillary Clinton, were against gay marriage. Explain that to me if you can.
Let's just explain it this way. Letter D. There you go. There's your explanation. It is the defense of a beautiful letter. And I admit that the letter D for Democrat, Dory, you got to admit, it's a beautiful letter. I mean, it's the best letter. So
you can't
there's that.
Have
that's
Dory without D, Todd.
That's a great point. I think that you call that out right. You call it the hypocrisy right. I'd also point this out, that there is this annoying fact that the Catholic Church, since, you know, the belief is that was the church that the Catholics will tell you that Christ himself founded, on this rock I build this church, and Peter decided what the church is going to be, etc. There's this annoying fact that this has been documented throughout time, what the early church fathers taught, what was taught within morality. And it's not a thing about gay marriage. This is a thing about adultery, and it's a thing that has a very deep meaning to Catholics on a theological basis. So they don't want to talk about that. And our local media has had zero interest in what the canons of the Catholic Church say. So I guess what they could do, Dory, is go back in time and maybe go to St. Peter and say, hey, Pete, look, there's going to be this thing coming at Kennedy High School. It's really bad optics. So if we could, because there's this thing called social media, it's not going to work. So they could do that. But I would add another layer to this story. I filled in for Rush Limbaugh about a year ago, and the Catholic Church scandal was breaking. And I got word from EIB, hey, we really need to cover this. And then we took calls, Dory, from around the country from people who'd been abused by Catholic priests. And it was harrowing. A very difficult hour of radio. And I took a call then from a Chicago public school teacher who said, do you know how bad that is here? I said, oh, with the churches? She said, no, with schools. And I began to look into sex abuse within the schools, because there's a funny thing about pedophiles, Dory. They want kids as targets. They go where kids are and where they can be in a position of authority. I have never seen, and maybe Danny Westin will do that now, I have never seen his coverage or even the local media want to turn a glance at the schools and covered the scandal there. So I don't know. It's almost like there's a selective agenda to go at this one church that should change. And it's, you know, there is the fact that, of course, Islam, they've modernized. They did away with that whole thing against gay behaviors, right? Didn't they strike that down?
Yeah. And that's the other part of this, too, is, of course, Islam has the same fundamental principles, but the media would never have the guts to say anything negative about the Muslim faith. And so it is yet another witch hunt. And again, that in no way excuses the despicable behavior that has been systemic within the Catholic Church all too often. And I don't think any of us are sticking our heads in the sand about, you know, moving one priest from a parish to another after being proven to have done horrible things. There's no excuse for that. But to take this one issue and say that an area where they have been consistent for thousands of years, and now suddenly, because we are so precious, we are so enlightened, we are the most brilliant slice of mankind in history, personkind, that what we believe in 2020 is the new dogma, and it's just not so. And the hypocrisy from the media and the lack of context from people covering the story is not surprising, but it is again another example of how you do not get any kind of balance in our media.
Yeah, I would just say one thing about the Danny Westin piece, because I've noticed that Danny doesn't do media. So I don't think he'll come on and talk to you, Dory, or exchange an idea. And I don't know that he wrote the headline, but it's in his piece that he needs to tie this into Rush Limbaugh. So it's Danny's theory that Rush Limbaugh says Americans aren't ready to vote in whole for a gay couple to be president. So he has somehow...
Meeting Pete Buttigieg. Yeah.
Right. So Danny has somehow conflated the idea of voting for president with who gets to teach in a Catholic school. When the two are very, very different, you're talking about the Catholic Church and the faith practiced therein. Versus a decision of, you know what, maybe I don't agree with Pete Buttigieg on this or Mayor Pete on this. And I think he's the best choice for president, because we do those trade-offs all the time in politics.
Sure.
I don't agree with this person's lifestyle or number of divorces or way they treat women. And on a policy front, look, I have limited choices. Here's what I'm going to do. So I'm going to vote this way. But hey, it was a clever bit of clickbaity to throw the Rush Limbaugh name in there. I'm sure that got a lot of click-throughs.
Well, and just to put a bow on this, one of the commenters made a great point and said, Mr. Westneat, it becomes ever more difficult to follow your logic. Number one, the state of Washington passed legislation allowing gay marriage. Therefore, the Catholic Church ought to sanction it, too. Two, it's the year 2020. Therefore, the Catholic Church should wake up and change its laws. Three, a candidate for president is gay, and a radio commentator talked about that. Therefore, Catholic schools should allow gay marriage by its teachers. And he said, you're all over the place with your illogic and non sequiturs. And I think that's a good summation of just how crazy the coverage of this has been. All right, up next in the Big Lead.
The Big Lead, top national.
I'm sure you've talked already about the Democratic debate last night, Todd.
Yeah, we were kind of given a point of view into that and what we expected to see. And, oh, yes, talking about it today and going back and forth on the little mini battles, everybody going after Mike. You know what just stood out to me, Dory, was the anger on the stage. The anger. There is not a person on that stage who's capable of self-deprecating humor. Not a single person on that stage is capable of making fun of themselves.
Well, and the person where that, I'm glad you brought that up because I would have forgotten to. But Amy Klobuchar, her voice was quavering with anger toward the end of that debate. And we have heard the stories because she's presented herself as this nice Midwestern. I can beat anybody in a general election. But there are stories from her campaign staffers of her throwing staplers at people and that she apparently has this violent fits of rage. And you could see that she was doing everything she could to try to contain that because it was just seeping through no matter how hard she was trying. And then you got Bernie, who is just sounding crazier and crazier with the socialism. Liz Warren is more and more unlikable with every word she utters. Buttigieg just sounds like a robot. He runs a city, Todd, that has a population smaller than Renton, and he's going to be the next president. Did you realize that?
Yes.
South Bend has fewer people than Renton, and he's going to be the president of the United States. I don't think so. So then you have Bloomberg, who is, you know, $500 million in his own campaign spending. But here, let's listen to just one click where Elizabeth Warren was taking him apart pretty effectively here.
I'd like to talk about who we're running against. A billionaire who calls women fat broads and horse-faced lesbians. And no, I'm not talking about Donald Trump. I'm talking about Mayor Bloomberg. Democrats are not going to win if we have a nominee who has a history of hiding his tax returns, of harassing women, and of supporting racist policies like redlining and stop and frisk. Look, I'll support whoever the Democratic nominee is, but understand this. Democrats take a huge risk if we just substitute one arrogant billionaire for another. This country has worked for the rich for a long time and left everyone else in the dirt.
All right, Liz. We appreciate it. So I just thought, I don't know what you thought, Todd, but I thought it was just a devastating night for Bloomberg. He can keep buying the hundreds of millions in TV spots where he's not challenged on anything. But in a setting like that last night, the man got devastated.
Yeah, and I guess what's most devastating about that for Bloomberg is the fact that it was a woman who herself is on the way out of this election.
Yes.
Who has the Americans have sniffed the fakery of this woman. They've sniffed the fakery of her pretending to be a Native American, pretending to have worked as a lawyer for the little people. None of that's true. They sniff this. So for Michael Bloomberg to be taken down by a fake Native American, a fake law professor who, you know, taught one class for $600,000, who herself is not, Liz Warren is going nowhere in this. That's the fascinating thing about what's happened. It also proves one point that you can spend a lot of money to bring your poll numbers up, but if you cannot connect with the American people and you can't do that genuinely, you're not going anywhere because you can. There's all sorts of critiques of Donald Trump. all sorts of critiques of him. And the fact is, he connects with human beings. They understand we're flawed. Like, you know, we were talking earlier about spirituality. Dory, all of us are broken containers. All of us are broken vessels. And very few people are looking for perfection from a presidential candidate, but they won't stand fakery. I am sad, though, because I was so looking forward to having the Republican trackers follow Michael Bloomberg around to watch him in his air-conditioned rooms and his extra salts and his big gulps and his favorite snacks, his Cheez-Its.
It's really something. And, you know, Bernie, the Democrats know that Bernie cannot beat Trump in a general. Buttigieg is so robotic, and he comes across as one of the least authentic. You know, he says all the right things, but they are just memorized lines from a drone that's flitting about the stage. And so it's going to be... I don't know what they're going to do. I understand their desperation, but as we've been talking about, it sure is fun to watch right now.
No, there's no doubt there is, and it's fun to watch. The other thing that I've been noticing about this particular session is there's a candidate missing, Dory. That's I don't know why he's not on the stage, and I think this could be the difference maker. Is there some reason that Michael Avenatti has not been able to make the stage? Is he?
I don't know. I do recall CNN was very enthusiastic that he would be our next president. Yeah. So I will look into that, Todd. I'll see if there are any roadblocks that he's facing right now, because he was going to be the savior du jour. So let me double check that one for you.
Okay. There's one other thing.
Since I opened this thing. Yep. You want me to close this dog down since I opened it?
Yeah. Let me step back and let the master do the work. Okay.
So there you have it. That is your Big Lead this hour.
The Big Lead on Cairo Radio.
We have lots more to do here on the Dory Monson Show. I'm going to go ice, but Todd Herman has lots of great stuff straight ahead. Todd, thank you. You're doing a great job, and let's chat again tomorrow. I'd love that.
We will make it happen. It's always an honor. Thank you, Dory. Coming up on the Dory Monson Show, some thoughts from me to folks who are uncomfortable around guns. Just sharing from the heart. That and some other things. That's Cairo Radio. Todd Herman filling in for Dory Monson on Cairo Radio. Awesome to have Dory on. Please continue your prayers for Dory that his healing will continue, because it's incredibly painful. And now the physical therapy's got, so he got a new knee. So now the physical therapy begins. Just one thing on Diane's newscast there. Just one point of comparison that Providence Sacred Heart in Spokane is going to be taking in some people suspected of having coronavirus. And they have a facility there. They're one of 10 in the country with this facility. Just a reminder that in King County, which is a bigger county with a bigger core city, with a bigger budget, with far more tax money to play with, Dr. so-called Jeff Duchin, the king of King County Health, he's the doctor whose priorities as a doctor are stopping what he calls gun violence, because he says that's a public health issue. So I don't know how a doctor does that, right? I mean, does he prescribe pills? Does he perform surgery? Is he contending that gang shootings are people in gangs are mentally ill? Is he contending it's a virus? That's one of his focuses. The other part of his focus is making sure that you can shoot up heroin whenever you want, wherever you want. As a doctor, of course, that's his wise judgment, that allowing people to shoot up heroin and eventually for you to pay for it in government-funded heroin dens and then eventually to buy the heroin. Those are Jeff Duchin's priorities for King County. He is storing people, and this is Seattle Times reported this, that Jeff Duchin is storing people in hotel rooms with coronavirus. So just compare Spokane, smaller city, smaller county, smaller budget, is one of 10 places in the country that can safely contain people who are suspected of having this illness that is passable through airborne contact with particulate matter. Jeff Duchin in King County, toss him in a Motel 6. No problem. Do you see the comparison? And someone asked me, said, okay, and this is, I love it when people do this. This is, I love this form of discussion. Someone said to me, yeah, it's outrageous. What's your solution? Because, you know, it's real tempting in talk radio to say, bah, 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 this is bad, this is bad, this is bad. What's my solution for King County? Well, prioritize. Budget. The solution is you do not have the money to go out and spend in Seattle on painting intersections. You don't. You don't have the money in King County to pay for the legal defense of illegal immigrants. You don't. How do I know? Because you don't have the money to have a proper facility to care for people who have a dangerous airborne illness. That's how I know. You don't have the budget in King County and in Seattle to give government workers these insane pensions that aren't available in the real world anywhere. How do I know? Because you're not able to take care of the core duties. The core duty being to keep people safe. You don't have the money in Seattle for $6 million vans as government-funded heroin dens. How do I know that? Because you don't have a secure facility to care for people who have a dangerous airborne illness. If you actually had any sense of priorities in how you budget, you would not be looking to Spokane to step in where the bigger city with more resources, with a bigger county with more resources, should be able to do the same. So my answer is historic, right? You should have done these things. Going forward, you could change. Dr. Jeff Duchin, who, well, quote Dr. Jeff Duchin, could say, wow, this is quite a learning experience. Spokane has a greater, better facility to protect people from airborne illnesses than King County. Maybe we should reprioritize, but he won't. Because it is Jeff Duchin who also led the lawsuit to steal your ability to vote against government-funded heroin dens. That's his focus. This is his theory. This is why I call him, quote, Dr. Jeff Duchin. It's not because I doubt he has a degree. I think it's 1985 from Rutgers. I don't see any publications or any work beyond that. But okay, he has a degree. He's an MD. But doctors are supposed to first do no harm. And the guy who runs King County Health has demonstrably done harm to King County. It's not arguable that he's done harm. He continues to want to do more harm, but he'll call it harm reduction. See, the harm reduction is that it reduces people dying immediately from overdoses. That's great. But it harms the society in which it's placed. And it creates an environment of drug dealing and cartels. But that's just in the one-party system. There is no stoppage. There's no floor. There's no ceiling. So they'll continue to push. At least if there was a balance, they'd have to kind of concentrate on doing the core duties. Otherwise, it wouldn't get reelected. But there's not. And there's not going to be in King County for some time because the Republicans in King County, they don't want to put up a fight. They'd much rather make backroom deals to get some tax cuts here or there. That's just the way the game is played here. That's just the fact. Other thing that's happening is statewide. And this is phenomenal. If you don't pay attention to, well, I don't, that sounds pejorative. You're busy. You're living your life. You probably don't have time to really understand what big news this is. But you know about the sex ed bill that has been making its way through this, has made its way through the Senate, is headed to the House. Dory spent an enormous amount of time on this, so have I, because we're both invested in it, because we both feel that the curricula tied to this is obscene. Not sort of obscene, literally obscene. And we've given examples. I hate it. I hate it. I hate giving these examples. I'm going to warn you that, no, I'm not, because there's kids. No, I'm not doing it. I'll just tell you, you can go look at Informed Parents of Washington on Facebook. You can go look at my Facebook page, facebook.com/Todd Herman Show. You can see the curriculum for yourself. It is pornographic, purely pornographic, starting with what they teach second graders. It is pleasure-based. The curriculum is, hey, all this stuff feels good. You should do it. It is being purchased by Planned Parenthood. Why would an entity that sells abortions want to teach proper sex ed? They wouldn't. They want to teach sex ed that focuses on sexualizing children from kindergarten on, literally sexualizing them. Here's what's so incredible. And this is from Informed Parents of Washington on Facebook. 634 people showed up on a Thursday in Olympia, Washington, to attempt to testify, or at least to be there to support people who were, all of them wearing green easily identifiable as the people who are against this Chris Rakedahl obsession with introducing the sexualizing of children in beginning in kindergarten. If you doubt me, Jim Fuda came on Dory's show with me. Jim Fuda, lifetime law enforcement officer, works for now Crime Stoppers Global Solutions, who concentrates on one of their missions is stopping global sex trafficking. Jim Fuda, not me, Jim Fuda said that this curricula will make it easier for sex traffickers because it removes kids' natural boundaries where kids naturally feel creepy when some adult wants to talk to them about how great sex feels. And they should feel creepy. The other thing he said is it is like grooming. Jim Fuda, Crime Stoppers. 634 people went down to Olympia to testify against this, to show support for people who are testifying against it. The number is massive. That is a wild turnout in Olympia, and it's a scary turnout for people who are going to try to support this bill and this curricula and force it into the schools. So I want to thank everybody who went down there because it's a heck of a drive. It's not a fun way to spend your time. But then I got reports back because I know a lot of people down there who are involved in this. Do you want to know some of the behaviors they observed? Well, the citizens of this state were testifying. There were Democrats looking at their phones, reading assorted papers, talking with colleagues, not even pretending to listen to the taxpayers and parents of the state. It's Todd Herman in for Dory Monson on Cairo Radio. Hey, it's Todd Herman continuing to fill in for my friend Dory Monson, who continues to recover from knee replacement surgery. And Dory sent an email last night basically apologizing for having had surgery. He is so committed to the show, and it shows all the great ratings, 25 years at the top of the charts. And I want you to know that he's thinking of you and just wanting to get back to the show full time. It was great to talk to him earlier. We also talked with Jesse Young, who I admit Jesse and I are very similar ideologically. So I don't know how tough an interview it was, but we talked about the defeat of this bill to limit magazine sizes in weapons. I really wanted to talk. I have such a desire to try to bring people in who are afraid of guns. And look, if someone points a gun at me, I'm afraid. If I'm with someone who doesn't know how to use a gun, I'm not going to be around that person. And I've been out shooting with a friend of mine who has a home gun range on his property, super safe. And we one time brought a friend of ours out who happened to be former military. And he was just not being responsible with his weapons. I don't know what it was about. He's well-trained. But Steve shut it down. He goes, nope. Sorry, look, I don't know what's going on. You seem like you're in a bad mood or something. I'm shutting it down. And fortunately, our buddy was, you know, respectful, said, okay, I don't know. You know, my head's not in this. So I just want to build a bridge, if I can, to let you guys know sort of the background of this, that at least in my case, I grew up around firearms because my father grew up around firearms, and his father did. And his father grew up around firearms because they used them in life. They were strictly tools, and they were used to feed the family. They were used to defend the family, because when my family came to the Eastern Washington area, there were no sheriffs, right? So they defended themselves. And so consequently, I grew up from a little boy on fascinated with the weapons. And what my dad did immediately with me was he took away the fascination. He did. We would have gun night at home, and I would say to him, I know, I can hear people going, oh, I can hear people out there going, oh, okay, so you're a two-year-old, you're having gun night. Let me explain gun night. This is where I would say to my dad, can we go look at your guns? It wasn't like we didn't have gun night. That's not the right way to say it. But when I said to dad, can we go look at your guns? He would say, sure. So we would go, and he would get the firearms out, and they were in his bedroom in a safe. He'd take them out of the safe, put them on the bed, and we would look at them. And I would ask questions. Where'd this gun come from? Where's this Winchester 2535 over-under come from? And he would tell me, all right, your grandpa brought this across the plains of the United States when he came out in the covered wagon. And I'd seen the covered wagon in which, well, not my grandpa, but great-great-grandpa came across. I've seen the covered wagon. Know where it is. It's fact at the Smithsonian Institute, if you want to know. So he'd tell the story behind that weapon. And what is this weapon? Well, this weapon was my father's weapon. He used it for hunting, etc. What is this weapon? This is a self-defense weapon. And when we did these things, he would go through with me the list of rules. And that is this. Is a gun ever unloaded? And the answer is no. Until I confirm that it's unloaded, I always assume every gun you see is loaded. Number two, do you ever point a weapon at anything you do not intend to kill? No, you never point a weapon at anything unless you are prepared to take that thing's life. Number three, do you ever fire a weapon if you don't know what's behind your target? Absolutely not. We went through how to hand one another a weapon, how to do that safely, how to exchange them safely, how to clean them safely. We went through all of that every time. And my dad said this to me, I will look at these weapons with you anytime you want to. If you ever, ever put your hands on my weapons without my permission, you will never have access to them again, ever. These are very dangerous tools. And he demonstrated that to me very clearly. So anytime I wanted to see them, I could. Now, we went up from there to, yeah, I began to shoot when I was a little kid. Targets and you know, went up into higher and higher powered rifles and pistols. Every single time, it was the same. My father would put the target out. He would come to me and he would say, secure your weapon. So that meant I would have my weapon in safety mode. I would have my hands not near the fingers, not on the trigger, etc. Present your weapon, and then I would do that very safely. Check downrange, check side to side. Is everyone behind you? Okay, you can fire. And when I would fire, go make the holes in the target. Hopefully, my dad would say, lower your weapon, secure your weapon. And he would turn to all of us. There were like three of us there. And he'd say, I'm going downrange, weapons down. And he would walk down, and he would check the target and come back to us. It was regimental and safe and respectful, so much so that when I was a little boy, I was seventh grade, I went to my friend Tom's house, and Tom didn't have a similar upbringing. We went to his house, my friend Eric and I, we were lifting weights. Tom came out of the bedroom with a shotgun, and he starts like goofing with it. I said, I'm out. And he goes, oh, I said, no, I'm gone. I'm leaving. And I made my friend Eric come with me. He goes, no, I want to look at it. No, Eric, let's go. And this Tom guy lived next door to Eric. So we took the weapon, or we left. Tom kept the weapon. We left, and he goes, what's wrong? I go, no, this guy doesn't know what he's doing. He's crazy. You never do that with a weapon. He goes, he says it's not loaded. I said, he didn't check. I watched him. He didn't check. He doesn't know if that's loaded or not. As we went into Eric's yard, playing in the backyard, look into Tom's window. He's pointing the weapon at us. And it turned out that he was a guy who was not particularly well balanced. So what I want to get across to you is this: there are personality types, and most legal gun owners are like my dad. And it turns out that shotgun, that wasn't Tom's dad's shotgun. That was a shotgun that a crazy neighbor boy had given Tom. And when Eric's mom told the parents, your son has a shotgun, the shotgun was gone. So it was a very, very quick response. Shotgun was gone. Tom got some help, thankfully, and he needed it. So the difference here that I want to get across to you is this. These are dangerous tools, and most people who've been around them know they're dangerous and have great respect for them. And I would just leave you with this. In a test of kids and what they do when they find a weapon, this is a scientific test, double blind, etc. When kids come across a weapon, if they were raised in a household like mine, they go get an adult. They don't touch it. They don't play with it. They go get an adult. If they're raised in households where there are no guns and consequently no gun safety, they then pick it up and play with it. Look, we're all different. I don't anticipate you all suddenly becoming fans of guns. I hope you don't. If you're uncomfortable around them, stay away from them if you're uncomfortable. But I hope you will understand, I am a dad. My friends who are gun owners are dads. We are horribly serious about making sure that our firearms are secured safely, and we are not a danger to you. God forbid we ever become a danger to you. Hey, it's Droy Monson Show. Todd Herman filling in. Coming up, Tom and Curly. Yeah, they're now on 3 to 7 on Cairo Radio.
From here on out, we can no longer be friends. And when we talk about things here, we must only discuss work-associated things. And you can consider this my retirement from comedy.
Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. You're really a fantastic audience.